when disaster strikes. Will you be ready?
Good evening, and we begin tonight with the monster hurricane and its deadly impact already.
When all hope is gone, will the government be there for you? If you're looking for ways to take your prepping to the next level, then you've come to the right place. Broadcasting from a secure and well-prepared location, it's time for Prepping 2.0. And now, please welcome authors Glenn Tate and Shelby Gallagher.
Well, welcome to episode, we don't know the number yet because we're recording this in advance. So episode whatever is appearing on your browser. This is Prepping 2.0. I'm Glenn Tate, and you, my dear, are?
Shelby Gallagher.
Really glad that was you in the room when I said that. Anyway, we are going to talk today about practical medicine. We have a great guest on who will just call him Jason. This is practical medicine. You know, we're always talking about prepping 1.0 versus prepping 2.0. Here's how that lays out with today's topic. Prepping 1.0 is having an IFAC, which is an individual first aid kit. That's a good thing to do. You should have one, all that. But prepping 2.0 is that next step, and it's all the stuff we're going to talk about here. It's more depth. We have an expert. Jason is an expert. He'll be telling himself or telling you about himself. So this is taking it to the next level. So this isn't an IFAC podcast. There are plenty of them out there, and you should listen to them. But here we go with Jason. So Shelby, why don't you tell us how you met Jason, ran into him?
I ran into him on the Googles. So he's a great example of someone who reached out to us, listens to our podcast that we've just barely gotten up and running. We're in our first couple handfuls of shows, and we're always looking for ideas. And he reached out to me and said, hey, I have experience in this area. And we kind of had an email exchange. I'm like, hey, let's have you on in as an expert. And he's a great example to me of, and Glenn, we're going to have – we talk about this. We're going to have some kind of big, big names on our show. Sorry, Jason, you're not one of them.
I was going to say, that's a lot of pressure, though.
A lot of pressure. But here's the thing. To me, you are one of these unknown celebrities among us. You're one of these heroes among us that you do amazing things and you lead an amazing life and you have amazing experience and knowledge. You know what, LeBron James? Sorry, you ain't it. You know what I mean? So it's one of those, I think there's so much good knowledge in the prepper community, and I love having kind of these folks like us calling in. Yes, Glenn.
And I think if you're listening to this and you have some expertise in some topic, go ahead, send Shelby an email, shelbygallagher321@gmail.com, and be like Jason, and we'll put you on the show because we love finding out about new topics. We just, you know, and a lot of our listeners are that intermediate level of preppers, yeah. And they know their stuff and they make great informative guests. So we love it. We encourage other folks to do that.
And we encourage humor. If you're funny and you make me laugh, that gets you in the door most of the time. So there you go. So let me just give our typical little real quick how you can reach us, prepping2.0.com. That's a great place to launch off and listen to us from Podbean, from iTunes, on YouTube, on blah, 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 all of that. Stitcher's coming, promise you. I got to fill out some paperwork for that. So that's the great place to start. You can reach Glenn and I on our regular author pages, prepping299days.com and agreatstate.com. Again, launch from there, go to all the social medias and all of that. And if you send an email to Glenn, and I know a lot of you do, he's busy. He's really busy. Send your emails to me if you have questions, especially about this show, because I will make a point to email you back. So, Jason, we need to talk about part two after the show. Glenn.
Yep. This is going to be one of our shows where we have an after show component for our Patreon supporters, patreon.com/prepping2.0 with point being a word. And we're going to have some really cool topics on there. Jason's going to be talking about his medical bag and what's in it, fish antibiotics for humans, natural medicine, and good places to shop. So I wanted to let you know we're going to have the full hour show. Jason will be on for the full hour show. And then the extra stuff will be on the after show for our Patreon supporters.
Prepping 2.0 after dark. That's why.
Yes, that's right. That's right.
It's funny because Glenn doesn't always like that because of the connotation with that. The after show, he likes after show, but that's okay. I like it's Jason. The, I like after dark. It's the nightcap. It's it's the nice end of the right. Very good.
I'm old and I go to bed early, so I mean I don't know what you kids are talking about with your after dark. After dark, I'm just sleeping. Hours,
there you go. There you go. So, and let me add, this is again one of the things we always hit every week, the top 100 of 100 things that are going to be, what's the end of that?
That are going to go first.
So because we don't know the number of this podcast, we're going to be real. We decided, and I love this topic. I am actually surprised it's number 100. I'm going to take number 100 off the list. It's goats and chickens.
Goats and chickens go fast when there's a collapse. Might that be?
Why might that? Because people are starving. Great example of that. And I'm going to tell everyone, I have had so many technical difficulties with the computer this morning. How many updates? I don't know. But I've had this all pulled up, so I'm going to go from memory here. I watch Venezuela a lot right now because they have been in a really awful collapse now for two plus years, ever since they voted in a major socialist as a president, overtook the government, their oil industry went kaput, and now literally you have, so it's not just goats and chickens, people are eating everything. They're eating because they're starving. So goats and chickens, you can't find them. You can't find livestock. You can't find dogs and cats. The zoo, and this at the zoo, there's been a couple of articles out there just recently about how the zoo has been broken into and people are eating zoo animals. That's how desperate it is. So to have goats and chickens, I'm surprised in a major collapse, especially something like Venezuela, that it's not like number 20 or number 25.
Well, you know, and the cool thing about goats and chickens is that there's two sources of food from them. There's eating them after you slaughter them, of course. And then there's, with goats, there's goat milk, which is disgusting. It makes me want to throw up, but I got a weird feeling I could get used to it. Maybe making some goat cheese, of course. Why wouldn't you, after the collapse, go to Whole Foods and spend $10,000 on goat cheese at Whole Foods? That makes a lot of sense.
You joke about Whole Foods. I call it Whole Paycheck.
Whole Paycheck.
It takes that much to go shopping there, yes.
That's right. And, of course, chickens.
Yeah.
You can have a delicious chicken-like stew or whatever, and eggs. That's the kind of expertise we bring to this show. Chickens produce eggs. That's the kind of expertise people have come to rely on.
So awesome. So so goats and chickens. And I would say in a full-on collapse, animals in general. And honestly, there have been some very, very tragic stories coming out of Venezuela, that even cannibalism. So when you are hungry, you are desperate, and it's sad to think about, but it's something you can prep for. So it's one of those things, get into, buy a couple of books, look into the YouTubes, look up animal husbandry. You can learn some awesome skills that will save your life. So yay, we got all the awesome introduction stuff that kind of loosens up our mind a little bit. Jason is now with us, and Jason, take it away. Tell us about yourself. Tell us what your experience is.
So I am a certified emergency paramedic. Got a few other, I call it alphabet soup after that title, but nationally registered paramedic. I'm a flight medic. I'm also a TECC, so it's basically tactical, battlefield type stuff. I wasn't in the service, but rapid treating trauma, things like that under less than stable conditions. In addition to that, I've done some critical care work, and I would say I'm at prepping 1.0 as far as myself, but that was due to the 299 days series that kind of lit a fire, and I've actually gotten my wife on board. So that's
yay.
Great. Nice. Yeah. Very nice.
Yeah.
So just because I know what you did before you got on this call, Jason, what cool things have you done today?
Well, we were running into some technical difficulties. One of those difficulties actually happened to be that I flew a patient out on a helicopter and had to ride along on that helicopter. It's the third time it's happened to me since I started in this area. So it's definitely a fun thing, but it's always unsettling to take off.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's yeah.
Yeah, but you got to ride a helicopter. That's kind of cool. I got to drink a lot of coffee today. Okay, so that's a cool thing. So let's start in with our topics here. And I love bullet points. So folks, grab your pen and paper. We're going to get into some meat here. And the name of this episode is Practical Medical. This is prepping medical. This is not go out and get your EMT training unless you want to, but this is things that you can do to be ready to treat people when needed. And I will say this, and we can talk about this a little bit more, Jason. This isn't just for collapse only uses. This is coming across an incident of some sort. And that's what really intrigued me about your email that you sent, is like, there have been so many times where you have seen a civilians in the mix of an incident who, because they have some knowledge, are able to be a game changer in that and actually help and be a game changer. So, you know, feel free to expand on any of those examples. But top five things, that's our first list, top five things civilians should be ready to treat.
So I sort of treat this by type. Mm-hmm. And the way that this was divided up, I really appreciate the bullet points. That was really beneficial to get that in the email. I treat it, it's either trauma, it's either immediate medical emergencies, or it's long-term. Mm-hmm. So the trauma thing is obviously handled by an IFAC or some sort of blowout medical kit. They're all over the place. You can find them anywhere. I'm a pro rep for a company called MyMedic, and they make some good stuff. I've used these blowout kits, various ones, actually. You can buy them at gun shows. You can buy them anywhere. You can build your own, actually. You can just go buy a bag, pull that list up of what's in there, what you're going to get, and match that list, go and buy it using your HSA dollars, whatever it might be. The medical stuff, asthma, allergic reactions, diabetic emergencies, those can also happen at any time. So a lot of this stuff, the trauma, I have about an hour commute to work, and I've been making this drive for 18 months or so. And I've seen four accidents in varying severity, from a rolled over car to a head on collision to somebody that just struck another car. And there were two people with cuts, bumps, and bruises. With that kit, you're able to treat. If you're not familiar with that kit, you need to be familiar with it. Go through it, open the stuff up, take a look at it, learn how to use it, and become knowledgeable about what you're doing. As far as the medical emergency stuff, stuff like diabetic emergencies, hypoglycemia, asthma attacks, allergic reactions, if you aren't prepared with the necessary supplies to treat and you don't understand what those supplies are and how they interact, you're going to have a really hard time. Thinking long-term about this stuff, I throw dehydration and diarrhea into the same category, because everybody's had the cold or the flu. And if you have the symptoms of the flu, you're going to be dehydrated. Every doctor on the planet is going to tell you to force fluids. If you don't stop the process of dehydration, you're cascading all those other effects. Most people with an allergic reaction or asthma know what they're allergic to, and they know what their medications are. So they're going to be your best source, your best resource for what's going on. All you have to understand is, what do I do with the medication? Do we have the medication, first of all? Looking at a lot of these scenarios, like you talked about Venezuela at the beginning of the show, you're not going to be able to find anti-diarrheals. You're not going to be able to find, if somebody has an allergic reaction to a pet, an animal, a certain type of food, you're not going to be able to find the Benadryls, the epinephrine, the, you know, that type of stuff.
Which Jason, and sorry to interrupt, which would lead me, especially with antidiarrheals, lead me to say, now's the time to get them. I mean, they're, 300 of them at Costco. It's like $11 or something. There's some things you can stock up on now, and other things you can't. You can't stock up on insulin right now. I mean, we had a show earlier where we talked about prescriptions and the need for prescriptions, and we had a doctor send us an email afterward, and we talked about it on the next show, and he talked about sort of over-prescribing things and then letting people stock up, which I assumed was a rarity among doctors to be to be that cool and break some laws, maybe. But I wanted to make the point that, yeah, try to highlight stuff that people can stock up on now. And things you don't mention about the stocking up, we'll assume you can't stock up on now. Because antidiarrheals, and I'm no expert by any means, but that is one of those things. It is so cheap and plentiful now, to my knowledge, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, you know, antidiarrheal pills don't expire. I mean, maybe they expire, but they don't go bad. I mean, they're not going to poison anybody or anything. And so those are things, the simple things. One of the things, you know, I've heard from other medics is third world situations, which, of course, a collapse would be like, all these easy little things, antidiarrheal pills, even cough suppressant and things like that, that end up killing people. And what a way to die, by the way. Basically, dying by dehydration via diarrhea, via, say, cholera or something like that. So there are some things people can get now, but some things they can't.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. That row at Costco, right in front of the cash registers, mm-hmm. with your vitamin supplements, your toiletries, and your medications, like you were talking about, Glenn, back when Claritin and Allegra were still just new on the market as off-prescribed medications. They used to sell a pack of 10 for $28. You can now buy the exact same medication at Costco. Excuse me. Buy the exact same medication at Costco for, you can buy 300 pills, like you said. It's mm-hmm. like $15.
Yeah.
So that type of stuff that you, if you can think, oh, I'll just run to the store and grab, that needs to be on the list.
Yeah.
Anti-inflammatories, children's anti-inflammatories, antipyretics or fever medication. So children's Motrin, Tylenol, Advil, all of that stuff is, you can stockpile it. And the expiration date, and I'll cover my paramedic patch for a little bit and just say, from a person who had a grandfather who was a physician, those expiration dates are guidelines unless the medication starts to smell like it's breaking down. You get a very strong chemical smell. With aspirin, you'll get, I believe it's an acetone smell, and the pills physically start breaking down. So that's just, for me, civilian, that's just a guideline. We'll put it that way.
You know, and that's good to know, because a lot of people get pretty uptight with expiration dates. And as I understand, we're getting maybe into fish by antibiotics. We'll talk about that in the after show. But is it tetracycline or something? There is an actual medicine that when it expires is actually not only diminished in efficacy. And that's a word I love using, by the way. That means whether it works or not. It can actually get poisonous. But, I mean, that is an extreme exception to the rule. And to go back to the Costco thing, because Shelby and I love going to Costco and buying gigantic gobs of prepper stuff because we're weirdos. But another thing at Costco that I think would be helpful, tell me what you think, would be hydrogen peroxide and rubbing alcohol. I'm guessing you can't have enough of that for treating wounds and sterilizing instruments and all kinds of stuff. What about those two things?
Yeah, so perfect unintentional segue. Looking at the medical emergencies, the longer term stuff, hygiene, soaps, cleansers, self-care, wipes, sterile wipes, isopropyl alcohol, hydrogen peroxide, that type of stuff, all of this stuff can be rotated. Our grandparents, our great-grandparents, they would buy or procure this stuff, and as they would use it, they would just replace the back stock. It was like their own little grocery store. So prepping 2.0, as I get from you guys and a few other people that I've listened to, you can rotate this stuff. So if you have 5 bottles of your Advil or your ibuprofen and you go through one bottle, you just start moving the stock forward. So bottle 2 is there. You replace bottle 1 with bottle 5, and you know, you can buy it when it's on sale. We're all pretty cost-conscious people. But that type of stuff, isopropyl alcohol, has multiple uses. Hydrogen peroxide, that's an oral debrider. So if there's an issue with some sort of tooth infection or anything oral with cleansing, like the mouth, you can dilute it to a certain strength, but it can be used the same as Listerine. Yeah. It's not very pleasant tasting, but again, goat cheese during a collapse, right? So looking long term, the hygiene stuff, feminine mm-hmm. products, pads.
Oh boy, that tampons. Oh my goodness! I'm so glad somebody's saying that, because I used to get mocked a little bit. I had a famous blog post that was called "I'm Glenn Tate and I buy tampons," and everyone thought, "Oh, that's really funny." Nope, it can be funny, but Absolutely. Keep going. I want to just put an exclamation point on what you were saying, but please keep going.
So one thing that gets overlooked oftentimes is just our day-to-day stuff. And that's one of those things that you're going to have women around in a collapse. Mm-hmm. So taking care of those ladies that are around is paramount. In addition to that, those things are impregnated. The feminine products are impregnated with things that can stop bleeding or promote clotting. Now, it would be funny to see a guy with a box of tampons, Glenn Tate, comes home with the box of Tampax and paid, what, $7? And then a new tactical prepper guy goes to a trauma store and there's a black box with a guy with a gun with a scope on it. And these are tactical bullet wound stoppers. And it's the same exact tampon and it's $50 a box. It's the same thing. It's the exact mm-hmm. same thing. And the uses for these things are, there's so many. So.
And by the way, you mentioned $50 a box. I know because I've done this. Go on Amazon Prime, get 500 tampons that are in their own little cylinder carrying case things. They're for vending machines, basically, or not vending machines, but dispensers in women's bathrooms or something.
Let me just jump in here. How do you know about this, Glenn?
Because I went online and bought it.
No, because somebody explained to you what's in a women's restroom when they come out of the dispenser. They are already kind of prepackaged.
That was you.
That was me.
those women's restrooms are a land of mystery. You have to understand that, Shelby.
I do. So, but yeah, can I continue that
Absolutely.
Story? Yeah. So we're talking about the famous blog post and all of that. And we're talking about, yeah, we should buy, well, at that time, Glenn was wanting to buy some. He said, if they have them where they're individually wrapped in almost like a what's called hardboard, it's the same sort of cardboard that is like cereal boxes. That's how they come out when you buy them for a quarter in a bathroom. Yeah, it's worth it because they're extra protected. They're a little bit, they can take a little bit more of a beating and they're packaged. They're just packaged better as opposed to buying a box of 100 of them or whatever. So yeah, and then they can, not only are they useful for the women in your life that are near you in a collapse, they're like you just said, used for medical purposes, but they also can be used for bartering if things really get awful. So yeah. Keep on going.
You mentioned bartering. We'll get back to these medical topics. A quick thing about bartering, the political hearts and minds community building side of my mind realizes that if you can provide a family maybe that's down the road from you and they're kind of reluctant about being a lookout for you guys to make sure maybe the authorities don't come, they're a little reluctant. If you can give that family, you know, 10 tampons or something, you're buying loyalty. And it sounds kind of like crass to say buying loyalty, but those sorts of things are really, really important. And you can say to that person with your actions, not with words, hey, we're the Patriots. We saw this coming. We prepared. We have extra stuff. Don't you want to be on our side? Because don't we seem like the ones who are squared away and everybody else, the motorcycle gangs and the government and everybody else, they're the ones that are all messed up and they couldn't get this for you, but we can. So anyway, enough of the politics about tampons. Let's talk about medical stuff.
That's a great episode title.
Go ahead. I was going to say, do you feel, because there's the next bullet points, but I don't want to stop you if you're on a roll. Go, Jason.
Well, so one thing that people don't really understand, I was talking to a coworker of mine about this, and he's got a lot more intelligence and experience than I do. This guy's an ace. He's one of those guys that you definitely want around. He said that the biggest thing that people skip over is cleansers, like personal hygiene. I mentioned the soaps and the cleansers and self-care, dental supplies, floss, toothpaste, that type of thing. Try and outfit your whole house or your prepping cache with a year's worth of what you use. Because something as simple as a bar of soap or a body wash that you like, or certain type of floss, you get stuck in a collapse and you use spearmint and all you have is cinnamon, it's going to be a rough life. You know what I mean? Yeah. It's just, it's a comfort thing for you. But the more important part So during the series of books, Glenn, I noticed that you reference One Second After by William Forstchen.
Yes, great book.
Yeah, I listened to the trilogy, and the fact that Balky from Perfect Strangers reads books two and three, excellent.
Don't be ridiculous.
Exactly. Oh, yeah. But one thing that stuck out to me is when the main character went to go rescue, I believe it was his father-in-law from the nursing home in One Second After.
Something
as simple as a cut on the arm that turns into sepsis. Sepsis is not something that you easily come back from. There's people in hospitals right now dying of sepsis. It's a widespread infection. It's treated with loads of fluid. I mean, we're talking liters, 3, 5, 7, 9 liters of fluid and broad spectrum antibiotics. The biggest thing is, first of all, prevention. Stop it at the first sign of it. But if you have something as simple as hand sanitizer and you get a cut and you're able to power through that sting and sterilize that area, you've already headed off that bacteria.
Yeah.
If it sits and you're fine, you don't think anything of it. As certain aspects of society start to break down, water, sanitation, just civility start to break down, little cuts become big problems.
Yeah.
Not everybody needs stitches, but everybody's got to stay somewhat clean and somewhat averse to or away from this infectious, I guess it would be flora in this case, that exists in the world.
Yeah.
And using those soaps, using those sanitizers, using those like personal care products is really, really key. I've learned a lot. Are you guys familiar with Doc Bones and Nurse Amy?
Yes.
Yeah. They just put a book out called Alton's Guide to Antibiotics. And of course we talked about the fish mox stuff is going to be for the after show, but that talks about infection a lot. And mm-hmm. if you look at routes of exposure and routes of infection, it's a simple process. How many people during flu season get sick? How many of those people do not wash their hands?
Yep.
A lot of people are in their peacetime world of no big deal, blah, blah, blah. And I've seen this where I was out in the field with a recently retired special operations medic. And one of the guys on the team got a cut and they were just kind of blowing it off, being tough guys and everything. And this medic said, shut your mouth. We're dealing with this now. It was unusually strong reaction from him. And team guy's like, well, yeah, no big deal. It's just a little bit bleeding. It was like, no, we're dealing with this now, because if you don't, and basically this medic had seen what had happened in austere conditions and he treated it as a really big deal. And my point is that it is a big deal, and a guy who's been out there and seen this and how this can go poorly, that's what you need to be paying attention to. So, well, I think we have come to the end of the first segment. We'll be coming back in a moment or two and we'll pick up on the top 5 things civilians should be ready to treat.
We'll be right back with more of Prepping 2.0 with authors Shelby Gallagher and Glenn Tate right after this.
Hello, folks. Shelby Gallagher here, wanting to let you know about a great event coming up, the Puget Sound Preparedness Expo. It's on Saturday, March 30th at the Baymont Inn and Suites in Bremerton, Washington.
It's going to be great. This is Glenn Tate here. We're going to have John Jacob Schmidt speaking, Representative Matt Shea, simulcast on 1400 AM KITZ Radio. Look for us on Facebook, Puget Sound Preparedness Expo 2019. Come on out and see us.
PrepperNet, where preppers unite. Looking to meet other like-minded people in your area? Looking to start your own prepper group? Already have a group? Join PrepperNet.com. PrepperNet has gathered the biggest names in the industry to help unite preppers everywhere. Join John Jacob Schmidt, Scott Hunt, Dr. Bones and Nurse Amy, Glenn Tate, Shelby Gallagher, Charlie Hogwood, Samuel Culper, Survivor Jane, Rick Austin, Franklin Horton, Ryan Mitchell, and Brian Duff. Our team is united. Check us out at PrepperNet. .com. PrepperNet, where preppers unite. PrepperNet.com.
Prepper Press is a small, independent publisher of survival nonfiction and post-apocalyptic fiction. At PrepperPress.com, you'll find a variety of books to guide you on your journey to prepare for a compromise to the electrical grid, natural disasters, economic collapse, political strife, or similar scenarios that could disrupt life as we know it. You'll also discover fictional yet believable stories about what happens to society when everything falls apart. To learn more, visit Prepper Press online at PrepperPress.com.
Hi, this is Glenn Tate. I wanted to let you know about the ammo supply place that I go to. There's no endorsements. Nobody's paying me anything. They're just good guys. Ammo Supply Warehouse. Ammo Supply Warehouse. Butch out there will take care of you. You know, prepping 1.0 is getting ammunition by the box. Prepping 2.0 is getting a case. You need to have at least a case of ammo for every gun.
Shelby Gallagher here. For all the ladies out there, you can never have enough ammo.
And we're back with more of Prepping 2.0 with authors Glenn Tate and Shelby Gallagher.
Welcome back, everyone. Joining us today is, first of all, just always want to say hello to Glenn. Glenn Tate's here with me, Shelby Gallagher.
Hello.
We're just back from our break with first responder, EMT certified guest of the day, Jason. And we just got done talking through, and it's I know for some folks this is... We all know this, but it's a good reminder what we need to be ready to treat in a collapse situation. And I think one of the things that I always need to be reminded of in a collapse situation, we live in pristine conditions now as human beings in the United States. We do. We live in a place, you know, where there's hand sanitizer everywhere, where there's clean bathrooms everywhere, where there's clean kitchens everywhere. And, you know, we're reminded everywhere to wash our hands and all of that. And there's the supplies and the things in place to do that. We won't have that in a collapse. It will become very grungy very quickly. And amongst that grunge comes disease that we can no longer treat because medical is collapsing, the medical side of things, because we can't find Band-Aids, because we can't, you know what I mean? So the just overall cleanliness of our environment will degrade, and we need to be prepared to treat that. So among other things, and you get to go back on this in the first half to hear the things we talked about. The next thing we need to talk about, and I like this part of it because I love equipping people with things you need to be aware of. What are five things, Jason, civilians need to be aware of? This is so important.
So the first thing on my list is knowledge. You can find a CPR class in a 30-minute drive radius. Churches, schools, fire stations offer it. People want to teach this. This is important. First aid, CPR, usually coupled together. And a lot of times people's careers will require them to be CPR certified. On top of that, something called CERT, or Community Emergency Response Team, or Wilderness First Aid. They sort of teach you organization, response, organization, recognition of a problem, and reaction. If people really, truly want to dive deep into the knowledge, EMT Basic, it's usually a semester at a college course or at a community college. You don't even have to take the test. If you want to get certified, good on you. Get after it. Study, learn about the human body, learn about trauma, learn about medical, and understand these disease processes. You don't have to get a job on an ambulance or at a hospital to do this. Mm-hmm. It's a good exposure for people. The biggest thing that the second top five is supply and rotated stock, like I mentioned earlier. Mm-hmm. What a lot of people don't understand is this supply and rotated stock is, did you call it just in time inventory, Glenn? Is that what it's called?
I certainly did. And that's for all kinds of stuff. It's for Doritos. It's for medical supplies. It's for gasoline and a lot of stores or wherever you would get things, gas stations, only keep a little bit of inventory, enough inventory for a day or two, and they're constantly restocked. And it's great for MBAs to figure out how to lower storage costs and all these other things, and that's wonderful. But the problem is that after a couple days, there's no more food at a grocery store, even with normal demand. That's without people freaking out. And so, and I'm sure it's true in the medical world. And so, yes, that's just-in-time inventory, which we're going to rue the day that we all thought it was a good idea because it's a terrible thing.
And it doesn't have to be an EMP. It doesn't have to be a military coup. It doesn't have to be any of these things. It can be 3 feet of snow in 24 hours.
Yes.
And it can be a family of people with a newborn who has a fever that can't get to the hospital and needs to call an ambulance that has to put tire chains on and drive through the snow. It can be something as simple as weather, a natural disaster. If you are not prepared for this stuff with extra water, extra food and heat, that type of stuff. But bandages, the bandages, you can vacuum seal bandages, mm-hmm. leave them in a dark place. They'll last forever. It's like toilet paper. I think episode 1, was it? You guys? Shrink wrapping toilet paper and storing it. Stuff like that. Bandages work that way. Mm-hmm. All of this stuff can be stored and you just rotate it through. Just go down, check on it occasionally. Let's see, what do I have on my list here? The next thing is sort of understand more knowledge is disease and vectors of transmission. Isolation precautions, safety glasses, gloves, things like that. Work areas for treatment. You don't want to treat somebody unless you have to in an austere place. If you have the ability to treat someone in a controlled environment, do that. And the biggest thing is understanding, for me, knowledge and practice is paramount. Mm-hmm. If you can control that stock, and think of it in two fields, trauma, medical, and personal care, meaning over-the-counter medications, long-term stuff, we've discussed mental health before, long-term collapse stuff for mental health people. We've discussed chronic conditions, diabetes. That's been brought up in multiple books, multiple survival books. We've talked about heart conditions. A family member of mine has myasthenia gravis. So a certain character in a certain book that was written kind of hit home for me. And I understand what that...
Yeah, that's a rare, rare, rare disease. It was based on a friend of mine. Wow. Yeah, those are very rare and very tragic.
Yeah, low... it's 4 stages, and my family member is low stage. She had the surgery, corrected it. She still has a little bit of fatigue. That's her symptom, which don't we all, but you know, at the same time, I understand her condition inside and out, and I'm able to treat that long-term if need be. And I've convinced my other family members to keep supply of this medication if they can, based on her prescription, because her physician may over prescribe her for stock.
Good.
Mm.
So truly understanding trauma, medical, CPR, first aid, the emergency stuff that, you know, lights and sirens, and we look awesome when we do it. But if we're talking about prepping 2.0, you need mm-hmm. to think long term, because that flood, that mudslide, that wildfire, that government takeover, any of that, it's not going to be over in a week. And think about what people with high, really, really high blood pressure or really severe metabolic or endocrine issues would do off their meds for a week.
Oh, and the mental meds. We covered that in another show. Goodness. Can you give some examples, Jason, or an example of people being off their meds and being normal and then being off their meds and then what that's like? Because I don't think people really appreciate this problem.
You're dealing with a chemical imbalance. You're dealing with, in some cases, a very volatile chemical imbalance. I practice jiu-jitsu, and it's not because I enjoy, the gi or the kimono. I practice jiu-jitsu for my own self-defense because we deal with a section of society that unfortunately has this problem. It's a mental imbalance. Something as serious as severe depression. Somebody on Wellbutrin or something like that can, if they are chemically imbalanced, they're not doing it on purpose, but they're going to start thinking these thoughts, surrounded by a society that has collapsed, a natural disaster. Instability only heightens the sensory and mental effects of that issue. Now, I'm not a physician. I'll never claim to be. That's many, many more volumes of studying, but all of these things will lead to amplification of these issues. If there's bipolar disorder, if there's schizophrenia, if there's depression, if there's anger issues, if there's any of that stuff that they require medications to be normal functioning members of society in terms of a physiological sense, that can be a severe issue for people. That can be a life-threatening issue. A lot of the stuff talked about in 299 days is huge, because when you bring up the fact that, and I forget her name, she wasn't thinking clearly. She thought she was thinking clearly, but she wasn't thinking clearly. And I don't want to give away the story, but that one character that was assigned a task, I believe it was the battery bank, there was a reason she was assigned that task, and getting her out of that situation was the best thing that she needed.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. You nailed it. And one of the things, and this is my theory, and I want to test it, and Jason, you tell me if this is correct or not. When it comes to mental health medications, in my mind, there are two problems when supplies are cut off. Number one is people don't have their medicine, and you touched on that. My theory that I'm testing here is, isn't it also true, God, I sound like a lawyer, don't I? Isn't it also true that when people who need mental health medications are not able to get them, that the body then does extra stuff, sort of like withdrawal or something like that? Is there like, not, is it worse than just not having the medicine? Is it the fact that the body is flipping out and saying, what the heck, where am I, you know, I don't know, Zoloft molecules, I'm making all this up. I mean, is that a thing?
You will see sort of I think a withdrawal effect is accurate. And if there's a physician, there's probably multiple physicians that are listening. I have zero ego, and I'm happy to get corrected on it. But I would imagine that it would be similar to something like an alcoholic that's going through alcohol withdrawals, or an opiate dependent person that is hooked on those, and then that is cut off. The body will begin to rely on that, and they'll have physiological changes, meaning heart rate, respiration, mental state. You'll have a change, a deviation from the norm, or homeostasis, as it were. I don't know the effects of those medications as far as those going away and what it'll do to the body, but I can imagine that there would be physiological changes.
Well, and let me add this too, Jason, if I can throw this in there. So there's the medication side, when we're speaking of the mentally ill that are going to collapse, it's going to be dicey if they can get their medications. On top of it, that is a population of people that do not do very well with change and stress. They don't do well and this is just my experience working with some members of this population, just they don't do well with change when you give them Rice Krispies instead of, you know, Cocoa Puffs for breakfast. It can make for a very bad day. They don't do well with change. So not only are they having issues with their medication, there's the environment, whatever's happening around them, there's now smoke in the sky because they lived near Paradise, California, that's smoky, and they can't get their medication. They're now under extreme stress, their withdrawals, medication's gone, this is a population too, like you just said, the reaction, whether intentional or not, can be violent. It is not a recipe for success here.
That's absolutely true. You add in those stressors, and if people mm-hmm. aren't functioning properly from a baseline to begin, it's going to make it very difficult on them. The issue that you're going to run into is the fact that it's going to compound.
Yeah.
Whatever's happening is going to get compounded. People, normal functioning people, I put normal in scare quotes. normal functioning people are going to have some sort of a mental change.
Yeah.
But those people who are already a deviation from the norm, whether it be a bipolar in a mania or a depressive state, a manic depressive or schizophrenic, that's only going to compound. And that compounding is something that needs to be observed and watched. We get a little bit of training. We're expanding on that. But what we're really trying to do is understand the why, and then understand how to try and fix it, I suppose. Yeah.
You mentioned something that I was going to ask you about, so please follow up on this. And it was basically that, quote, normal people, there'll be some effects on them. And I know it's going to vary based on the conditions they're under, how much sleep deprivation they've had, how hungry they are, how scared they are, how remorseful they are that they didn't prep. I think that's going to be one of the mental health drivers for normal people. There are going to be a lot of people, like tens of millions, that are going to be sitting around thinking, oh my goodness, if I would have done what my prepper friend told me I should do, I wouldn't be here. And I think that guilt is going to be horrible. So normal people under extreme stress, not mental health medications, what are some things to look out for that? Because that's going to be a big deal.
As far as the signs and symptoms to watch out for, mm-hmm. you're going to see overly aggressive, and it's going to be consistent. It'll be sustained. You'll see a withdrawal from daily life. I keep kind of flashing back to certain characters in your book, Glenn. You'll see certain characters would withdraw from this whole thing. And you see that they would have mental health issues that would emerge. You'll see there's a difference between frustration and aggression. Mm-hmm. Everybody's going to be frustrated, but there could be a very, very big, like, disassociative frustration, meaning they're going to get mad at somebody across the street and charge them like a zombie from 28 days later. And you'll see that. You'll see posture changes. You'll see people slumped over, ears kind of pinned back, and, you know, balling of fists and things like that. But as these meds and as this chemical imbalance wears off, they're going to regress back to the state that they were in prior to the new baseline being brought in. As that progresses or digresses, depending on how you look at it, that can be new to some people. That can be familiar to some people. So if you're in a community and you know this person is unstable, or there's an imbalance there, you're going to know what the signs are to look for. We know each other well enough at my fire station. We know when something's wrong. We can tell. And we'll talk to them. We joke about it, but we know what to look for. So one thing that's important is that the community aspect of that. And when you look at the changes of people in the community, it has to be a mindset change. And usually people with some sort of mental health deviation will have less of an involvement in the community if they were on that baseline. So that's the biggest thing to look out for. So.
Okay. Well, I'm going to change a little bit here because I think it's fascinating. But there's one thing I wanted to I always like a good story, Jason. Why? Because I write them. Oh my gosh, yeah, I've got so many I've got to write. Yes. So this is where I want people to be inspired. Tell us, and this is, again, what caught me in your email when you sent it to me, how civilian, you have some pretty good stories about how civilians, because they're in the right place at the right time when something happened, when an incident happened, and because they had knowledge, they were a game changer. The outcome was, you can see, was significantly different had that person not been there or been there. What inspire our listeners with something that you can add to that?
So I was recently driving to get, ironically, getting some medication for my wife. She was diagnosed with pneumonia, and it wiped her out. She's happy and healthy now. And so I'm driving down to get her medication. She's resting on the couch, and I stopped at a stop sign. I was punching in some directions, and I look up and watch two cars go head on at 50 miles an hour.
Oh my.
And so newer car and an older car, airbags in one, no airbags in the other. And I watched in slow motion as this young man's head hit the windshield. And there was two people in the older car, one person in the newer car, She got out, started screaming. Bystanders stopped, and I realized we were in a little dip between two gentle hills on this two-lane road. And so I needed to get them off the roadway. I needed traffic controlled so nobody got mowed down by a car. And it was like herding kittens because I have one in the middle of the street. I have the two guys that got out of the car and were both dazed, both from the possibility of some head substances injury on board and head injury. Yep, good spot. And they're wandering around asking for their parents. And the woman is screaming that her chest hurts. She takes precedence right now because they're up and walking. I moved her over to a guy that had pulled over with a truck, had a canopy on it. I put her in the truck, the canopy. I got out that first aid kit, which I had gotten 2 days before. I kid you not. Started working on her and made sure that she didn't have any severe internal injuries as best as I could discern. And then I had to corral the two guys that were wandering around in the middle of the street with the two blind hills just waiting to be hit by trucks or cars.
Yeah.
So I had two civilians that were there. I had one person call 911 and two civilians round up those guys and kind of move them over, walk them over to a parking lot that was right there. It was actually somebody's driveway. And the biggest thing is getting everybody out of harm's way and changing that environment first and then treating what needs to be treated. So,
could I interrupt you for a moment and tell you an amazing add-on to what you just said? Because this is so true. And I never thought of this because in my peaceful world, this never happens. And it goes like this. Again, my special operations medic friend, he was giving us a medical class. And he said, and I thought he was kidding at first, but he wasn't. He said, often the best way to treat a patient is to return fire. Think about that. You have to get this situation stabilized and all of that other stuff before you can even start working on somebody. You have to make sure the problem is taken care of, like you were mentioning with the dip and the traffic. And that's not something everybody thinks about. They think about, oh, medical. That would mean, like, I don't know, using a blood, a blood clotting agent or something on a gunshot wound. But anyway, I just wanted to amplify what you just said.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's the biggest thing. If you see something immediate that needs to be changed, change it. And your special forces friend is absolutely right. If you need to return fire, in this case, it wasn't actually me firing at anybody, but that fire is, I need to get these people out of the road so we don't get blasted by somebody on their cell phone going 70 on a 45 mile per hour speed limited road. The road was wet. You immediately become aware of weather at some point when you get this training because you realize everything is trying to kill you. That being said, I got these people over. I started treating her, and I started bandaging up the two guys with, hopefully, fingers crossed, concussions. As I'm checking her out, I'm feeling her rib cage around the breast area, making sure nothing's cracked. I'm listening to her lung sounds, and I'm concerned about great vessel damage, so the vena cava and the aorta. I want to make sure nothing's torn and we're not going to have any serious issues there. As I'm treating her, her fiance pulls up and he is hot. He is fired up. He is ready to fight somebody because the new car got ruined. And
wow. So I thought he was going to try to beat up the guys who did this. That's what I would have done.
Yep. Well, that's who his anger was targeted towards. So I grab a civilian. She said she was a CNA, which is a nurse certified nursing assistant. I said, I need you to get me a set of vitals. Here's what I need. And she was able to do it while I diffused that situation. I said, look, I got in that guy's face and I said, I know you're upset. I understand that. I know your car is damaged. Your wife is alive right now. That's a plus. What I saw happen, she's lucky. Don't be upset at those guys. Or be upset at them. I don't care. But the last thing you need to do is go to jail before you go see your wife in the hospital, provided you get out of jail and get to go see her. Don't beat anybody up. Don't do it.
Exactly.
I toned him. I got him down to about a 7 on a scale of 15 and put him to work. I said, you know what? Your wife might have some broken ribs. I need you to calm her down so she's not breathing so rapidly so that she doesn't get an injury to her lungs. We don't need that. We don't need to make things worse. Talk to her. take her mind off of things, hold her hand, support her. So civilians on scene, our natural instinct is to help. We have that compassion and we want to do that. All we need is some knowledge and direction. That's where I step in and I'm able to help people do that. Hey, I need you to keep your hand on this wound so it doesn't bleed for me, okay? Or go boil some water while your wife's having
exactly
kids.
Well, and let me jump in here. As you're telling this story, this is where I think people need to also know. Listen, as you listen to Jason tell that story, listen to all that happened, and the ambulance hasn't even shown up yet. There's such a lag of time, unfortunately, between, it can be, you know this, if the accident happens right down the street from the station, that's great. But if it happens a little ways out, the response can be so varying that there's so much that can be done there. And also, too, I want to add to this. If you don't have medical training, I hope you're inspired to after you listen to this show today. But if you don't have it, get out there with your flashlight and direct traffic. That is huge. That is so huge because one of two things happen. This is my experience, and this is people either just keep driving by and kind of try to snake their way around whatever debris is in the road, and they create a traffic hazard, or they all stop and create a traffic hazard. Or they sit there on their cell phone, you know, trying to text somebody or put something on Instagram of what they've just, it's ridiculous how people act sometimes in these situations. You don't have to have medical knowledge to direct traffic. Good flashlight, yeah, maybe. But I just listening to that, imagine these people, the three people that you talked about that were in this accident, that didn't have you there on this scene to be able to check them, to be able to calm them down, to keep them from wandering into traffic, to be the, kind of the, that first responder. That is key, and it makes it so that it's a game changer for these folks. I'm hoping that their outcome was good, and I'm sure it's because of that. And Glenn is waving to me. Did you want to add to that, Glenn?
Yeah, you know, you bring up a great point, Jason, and it applies to far more than just traffic accidents. I marvel at this all the time when there's a traffic accident or something, and I'm no medic. I have a decent trauma kit, but I've never had to start using it because there are other people there. This is the thing that amazes me. Most people, and this will apply in prepping situations after the collapse, just sit around and they wait for somebody to do something. And so I, maybe it's my personality, take it upon myself. I show up and I start going, and you mentioned tasking people, the CNA, tasking the CNA with getting vitals. I'll show up and I call it my lieutenant's voice. I'll be like, I need you to do this. I need you to do this. I need you to do that. I'm out directing traffic. I'm talking to cops. I'm doing all this stuff, all these other things. And I haven't even touched any medical gear because I'm not really qualified to do that. But, you know, that's something that people listening to this need to realize. It's maybe it's not your nature, and maybe you think you're going to get sued, or maybe you think you're going to hurt somebody. Don't worry about getting sued, by the way. That's all overblown. Trust me, I'm a lawyer. That's the one thing I show up in an accident knowing is the law, right? The least important thing. But just get it done and be that person who says, you, call 911. And you do that, and it's amazing to see all these little sheeple, grasshopper people, all of a sudden they see somebody taking control, and then they now I can help. And then they ask, well, what can I do? And I start making stuff up sometimes, right, about what people can do. But this has happened in a couple accidents where I've been blown away that people just, they don't take it upon themselves. You have to be in a collapse or in a traffic accident now or a variety of other situations, you have to be that person and no one else will do it. We have about a minute left in this segment. Jason, for the regular show, that is, we'll be going into the after show in a moment here. But Jason, what are some final thoughts that you can give people who are the practical medical prepping 2.0 kind of folks?
This is a huge... So let's go back a little bit to what you talked about with the special forces things, hearts and minds, right? Being that person in a collapse situation or an emergency situation can really, really, really make a huge difference. The biggest thing that you can do is gain some knowledge and practice it and then start tailoring your knowledge and your equipment to what you're trying to accomplish. And I think of it like triage, immediate, longer term, longest term. And if you start with the immediate, you can find your way into the long term and then work into the longest term for survival situations or for collapse situations or just being prepared as an adult in this century. You know, it's that's it.
That is fantastic, Jason. A great way to end. Well, if you are one of our Patreon supporters, stick with us and listen to more of Jason in the after show. And if you're on the regular show, thank you very much for listening. Say goodbye to everybody, Jason and Shelby.
Hey, it has been an absolutely amazing experience. I've been honored to be on the show.
Thank you so much.
Adios.
You've been listening to Prepping 2.0 with authors Shelby Gallagher and Glenn Tate. All of the fun and easy prepping information heard on this podcast can be found online at prepping2-0.com. You can also find out more about Glenn's books online at 299days.com and about Shelby's books online at agreatstate.com. Until next time, be smart, be safe, and be prepared.